And welcome to Full Moon Radio. This is your host, Laura Placeris,
with her co-host, Sandy Jorgensen.
And tonight we have a special broadcast for you with someone that we feel is an important person in our book as far as the field of the paranormal and of the unexplained, just about everything. He is what I would consider someone that's well-versed in myth, well-versed in history, and certainly has not only researched, but has a lot of information just from being raised in a certain part of the world, which would be Europe and in Ireland specifically. Our guest tonight is Michael Dazarian, and he's going to be talking to us about his new book, as well as the Tarot. And he specializes in Tarot. He's got a website on the Tarot called Taroscopes. And it's the T is not on the end. It's TAROSCOPES.com. If you're new to Full Moon Radio, you can go to our website at fullmoonradio.com. You can also come by and chat with us at the chat room. Right now we have with us in the chat room our affiliate from Omaha, and that's Robin Valley Community Radio. And also Scott L. from the Ghostly Talk Show is still there. So, Desert Moon. Desert Moon is a techno DJ on another radio show. So, and he's visiting us with our esteemed guru and head of Omnisound, Mr. Jeff Bird. I did want to let you know that Mayhem is coming along well. We do have a show on Thursday nights called Full Moon Mayhem. And that show is we're just getting more booked and more interesting people coming on the show. Yeah. It's really going to be a lot of fun this next month. Sandy and I have something special that we want to share with you that's really, I think, very funny. So, and I came across this week, and I said, oh my God, we've got to read this on the show. It's just too good to keep to ourselves. So, before we start the interview today, we're going to share the top 25 signs that your psychic has no clue what she is doing. Number one, her crystal ball has three finger holes. And number two, she asked about your future. Number three, she thinks your name is Julie and you are a guy. Number four, she doesn't know that you don't have any money. Number five, see, she suggested you bet on green when playing roulette. Number six, she can only predict last night's Powerball numbers. Number seven, advised you to buy stock in Enron.
Oh, bad.
I know. Number eight, frequently wins the lottery but fails to redeem the tickets. Mm-hmm. Number nine, her shop is closed due to unforeseen circumstances. Unforeseen. Got a problem with that. Number ten, mispronounces psychic.
Well, don't we all?
psychic. Number 11, read your palm pilot rather than your palm. Number 12, she didn't foresee that you were going to use a bad check. Number 13, shh, under there, Danny, or the customers will hear you. Number 14, your future is very clear, Mr. Jones. You are pregnant.
Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. Jones.
Oh,
she's got her sexes wrong. Number 15, couldn't predict IRS audit of I-900 business. What? Oh, let me start over again. I read it wrong. Couldn't predict IRS audit of 1-900 business income. Okay. Number 16, tells you Michael Jackson is going to start. Oops, we're not going to read that one.
That's a delete.
I caught that one before I read it. Good thing. Number 17, shaves her head, arms, and legs to better pick up the psychic vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does she wear tinfoil, too, on her head? 18, she can't explain how it works. Never trust one who can't. Number 19, she can't see you due to unforeseen circumstances. Number 20, she doesn't see into the future. She sees into the present. Whatever the heck that means.
Read that again.
Yeah. Number 21, she voted for George W. Bush. I like that one.
I knew you would.
Mm-hmm. 22, wait a second. What was your name again? 23, warning, beware the Ides of April. Oh, my God. Number 24, what else would she be a psychic? Why else would she be a psychic? Number 25, in order to predict the future, she subscribes to USA Tomorrow. That's so bad.
Bad.
Oh, my gosh, that is so bad. Well, let's just move. I couldn't resist that one. Oh, boy. That actually, you know where that came from? That came from the Keepers of Lists. If you go to keepersoflists.org, you can find that. They have a whole bunch of funny stuff up there. Well, let's introduce Mr. Zarian. Tessarian. He was born in Ireland, an expert of the occult histories of Ireland and America, has made the deepest researches into the comparative mythologies of the world and into his own country's ancient and mysterious Celtic tradition. His presentations on Atlantis and the origins of evil have been acclaimed by veterans in the field of paranormal research. In the tradition of I'm not sure what that word is. Comyns Beaumont, Ignatius Donnelly, Emmanuel, oh gosh, these words I don't know, William Bromley, and Eric von Däniken, I know that. Michael considers the consequences to civilization of extraterrestrial involvement and seeks to clarify many of the quandaries that other visitation experts have overlooked. His book on the orchestrated chaos of modern times clarifies the disinformation about, oh my God, I need new glasses, excuse me. Okay, let me start over. This is bad. His book clarifies the disinformation about Atlantis and the lost continents of prehistory. It concentrates on the orchestrated chaos of modern times and reveals how the political and military machinations of the present have their roots in the ancient past. As well as stating the problems, Michael also furnishes us with solutions to the moral and social predicaments that have beset humankind for millennia. I'm serious. I need new glasses. I can't read that. I'm getting old.
He uses hard words, Laura.
Oh, my gosh.
This guy's site, if the Taroscope site is fantastic. It's like the best one I think I've ever been on.
Oh, it's incredible. So let's bring Michael on, since I can't wait any longer, and introduce him to the audience. Welcome to Full Moon Radio, Michael.
Laura, hi. Nice to be on your show, Full Moon Radio. Great.
Wonderful. Well, we were very excited, and I hope you heard some of the... I had some problems with my glasses, apparently, but a very interesting bio, and certainly we're excited about hearing about not only the Celtic traditions, but everything that you've researched on Atlantis and information on the Tarot. Sandy and I, just for your information, used to belong to a kind of a Tarot group, and we met like every week. We would get together with a bunch of other gals, and we would study like a new card, and then we would do practice readings on each other, and we did that for a couple years, and you know, we kind of lost interest for other reasons, but we're certainly fascinated with that. But most importantly, your book on Atlantis.
Yes.
But first of all, can you tell us how did you get started in this research on Atlantis?
Well, yeah, that's, first of all, let me say I'm glad that, it's great to hear that you work with the tarot in that way, in that spontaneous way. That's certainly a, you know, very appropriate thing, and, I wish more people would actually do that, you know, would bring the tarot into their lives. I actually got started, with the tarot specifically. I mean, I come from a metaphysical background, so I think it's been in my blood for many generations, but the tarot specifically came into my life, I think, between the years of 9 and 11. I'm not quite sure. I think it was about 11 years of age. When my family was affiliated with the Paul Solomon Foundation, what used to be called in those days the Fellowship of Inner Light Movement. It was actually one of the very first mystery schools in America, and it was created and founded by the great Paul Solomon, who sadly is not with us anymore. But for people who want to know about the great Paul Solomon, he's a very esteemed figure in the mystery school tradition in this country. They have their website still, paulsolomon.org. Well, he had an international organization that ran from Virginia Beach, and we had hosted, I think either it was his secretary or another lady that was, you know, very closely affiliated with his inner circle, had come to Ireland to be with my mother. And also, my mother was a sort of a internationally renowned clairvoyant who tried to bring speakers from the Paul Solomon organization to Ireland, because as you can well imagine, back there in the 60s and 70s in Northern Ireland, it was tremendously violent and very, very chaotic place, you know.
Oh, yes.
Just in the sense of the injustice and the delinquency and the utter, you know, unspiritualness of the place. So we, being a very small group of, you know, people who were into these metaphysical teachings, tried to work with, you know, Paul to bring some speakers over, and we actually did manage to do that. But when this person that was very affiliated with Paul came over, she was using the cards. She actually used the cards regularly, and just for our own private meditations, you know, separate than public talks that we were trying to set up there, just purely to us, the inner circle. And I was, of course, only about 9 or 11 at the time, you know, and I was fascinated by the cards, fascinated with the idea of prophecy and clairvoyance, you know, and extrasensory, you know, powers, because I'd always felt that, even coming from a metaphysical background, that I had been misunderstood, even by my parents. I guess everybody feels that way.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem much different from my point of view, and having to go through the bloody school system over there, which is very Dickensian. So this lady appears, you know, with these wonderful cards and is telling me, you know, I've got all these psychic abilities. And it was proven immediately. I had a rapport with the cards instantaneously.
Wow.
I'm never going to forget that time, because she did lead us through meditations, and those meditations had an enormous effect on me. For other people, they were just sort of, you know, interesting and it was wonderful. But to me, they had a marked effect on my unconscious, dramatically so. And then years later, you know, I again started working with the cards more when I came back to America. But that was the initial moment when I realized that these things are both very powerful from a visualization point of view, from a strengthening of the intuition point of view. And, of course, later when you become more experienced, then people can do readings and do prophetic type of work with the cards. You know, it was a very, very powerful time. And when this lady continued, you know, staying with us for the week or whatever it was, you know, she demonstrated herself a lot of psychic abilities. And it's just fascinating to a young person. You know, me and my brother, we were, like, fascinated by this. And it took us in a new direction to realize that, you know, these are healthy things that can serve humanity through this, you know. So we had a great deal of respect, and didn't come to the tarot, as most people do, through the disinformation and the fear, you know, and the superstition that often surrounds, you know, the tarot specifically. We were able to forego that.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, you don't see that too much. I know from my point of view, my two youngest children go to a very strict, non-denominational type church with their father. And they teach them, of course, the horrors of tarot. And my son came home to me one day and said, "Mom, I still love you, even though you do those evil cards." And it was really traumatic for me, because I was thinking, oh, my God, they're teaching them the stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the thing is, even at a young age that he was at, like you said, disinformation, you know, as he got older, he started realizing that some of this stuff was just bogus. And the more he's around me, he realizes, well, I'm not an evil person, obviously, and it's not created any kind of horrible things for me. So, It's wonderful that you were able to grow up with that at such a young age. I wish that I'd had that opportunity so young as well.
Well, I think that teens have a great compensatory nature, that even those who've been brought up in a very strict environment, you know, it's still, there's tremendous abilities. The children still sort of have this ancestral reservoir of knowledge and will come back to it. They have this remarkable ability for being able to outgrow even very radical, you know, sort of dumbing down. It's incredible, you know. Not all the kids make it. Some of them stay very much within that frame of reference, but you know, a lot of them, you know, snap out of it. And even within the Orthodox religions, it doesn't mean they have to leave their religions. That's not the point. But the point is that they realize that maybe they haven't been given the full story. You know, I think through watching some good films and just, you know, generally being intrigued. You see, there's just something in the human spirit that is always going to be attracted to these mysteries, no matter how they're blotted out by those who want to take away our power and always put representatives in our way so that we lose our power, give our power away to these external authorities. But still, there is something within the human psyche that, you know, has that streak of independence and can snap out of the conditioning that, you know, they receive. I've noticed that several times in classes that I do, you know, mm-hmm. and the interest that I get, you know.
So, yes, I find that to be true as well. So, you know, as you come into learning the tarot over the years, did you study books upon it, or did you just basically take the cards and study them yourselves, look at the pictures, you know, bring about the intuition, or did you take to different books to learn more about them?
It was both. It was about 10 years later, maybe even more, I'd say. It was when I returned to America in 1990 that I've always been studying this subject, but I had never, unlike my mother and unlike Paul and unlike my grandfather, all of these people who were extremely adept and were professional and had, you know, had these mystery schools and had these foundations, I couldn't care less about any of that organized stuff. You know, I appreciated that that was the road that they had taken, but I'm like an extremely rebellious character and never saw myself, you know, doing anything in a bricks and mortar way by opening ashrams or anything like this. But I had been studying it. Nevertheless, I'd been studying assiduously, even in the rain-soaked streets of Belfast, you know, when you're really, you know, on the dole in Ireland and, you know, in a war-torn place. I'm running around, you know, trying to study metaphysics and spending hours in libraries and reading up on these subjects, kind of a very much a fish out of water, having very, very few friends and very few people who were, you know, interested in this. But then when I came back to America, well, this is America. You know, there's a metaphysical bookstore on mostly every block, so it's a totally different environment. And you can get books here that you couldn't get in Ireland because they were taboo, in the sense that even if you had a little, you know, pathetic bookstore over there, they'd have a tiny shelf, which they called their metaphysical section. It was a total joke. And then even if you special ordered for something from one of these bookstores, you know, I would order something, go out the door into the street, and then see the guy scrumpling up my order and throwing it in the trash. I would see this constantly from outside. You know, so if you ordered something from Madame Blavatsky, you see, or anything, they were, you know, so orthodox, they were going, we're not going to order this, and we'll just keep this guy on the hook, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, very difficult. And then coming to America was a big breakthrough because, of course, you have access to this. There's not as much prejudice. People go, you know, it's a free country, and everyone has the right to do what they're doing. So I then completely spent, you know, about 10 more years of assiduous now, like really completely, you know, it's like that, what do you call it, a degree program or master's, you know, thesis type of thing.
Right.
I really studied the tarot thoroughly. However, my mind, though, because I had read so much and I did know so much about what other people had written, I started to notice, and probably this was from the outset, I started to notice that there was a lot of X factors in these people's books, meaning the stuff that they weren't answering, the contradictions. I have an eye for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like super. I don't know. It's a super critical ability. It's not very wanted in the world, but it's certainly healthy when you're doing any kind of research.
Yeah.
Why does he say this? Okay, now the guy's contradicting himself on this page, and over here there's, okay, he doesn't explain this, and then this seems to be a contradiction. So instead of just sort of, you know, like we all do, not bother dealing with that, I used to actually write the stuff down. I would like mark it, and then I built my own system, in short, out of the X factors of other people's system, with the idea originally that I didn't want a system. I wanted an anti-system. But the thing was, coming through the back door, was sort of like, okay, why is this guy not explaining this? And this is, I'm talking about even some very great people, some of the very fine writers, but there's just glowing contradictions in their books. And so I would notice those and try, you know, my mind would not let go of these problems. And then what happens in a couple of years is that you end up having this entire pristine system built out of the wreckage of other people's systems. It's a kind of a Zen Taoist thing. I didn't plan it, but there it was. And then I thought, my goodness, I've really got something here that's tremendous. And of course, this is, you're guided. It's not my intellect doing this. I was guided to do this because the tarot and these subjects have been so maligned. So there's so much misinformation and there's so much disinformation that I felt I had a destiny with the cards, as I was talking about. And that in a way, that force was guiding me to make it that I would bring back the pristine system. I didn't know at the time what shape that was going to take. I didn't know that later on, I was going to find the secrets of the connections between, astrology, tarot, Kabbalah, and numerology. That none of this was pre-planned. My mother was a world-famous numerologist. I've studied with numerology all my life. But I had no idea that, I was going to find these intricate connections between the four great disciplines. This was something that finally I understood and realized that, okay, then I'm sort of obligated now to, bring it to the rest of the world, because these discoveries are just too great for a personal scholar in his little garret, and say, oh, wonderful, I really cracked this or something, that ego type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that there's no way that I would have been guided to make these unbelievable discoveries if it was just meant for me.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what causes a lot of confusion with people these days is that there's, like you said, there is a lot of conflicting information. But one of the things that I find is conflicting with almost every single person that writes any kind of history on Tarot is where it came from. And, they'll say, well, maybe it came from Egypt, or maybe it came from the Templars, or maybe it came from the Gypsies, or whatever. And with all of that information, and then, of course, I talked to another person a few weeks ago that said that it came from Italy, and it was within this family, and they developed the major arcana, which are the major cards of the deck. And so we're confused here. Do you have any kind of insight onto this?
Yeah, there's really no doubt about it. Anyone who's really done their esoteric homework, that the cards do come from Egypt. The prototypes of the cards are found even before Egypt in Ireland. So there's an Irish connection there, which has not been brought out enough, because the suits of the tarot, which are, of course, we know what the suits are, the wands, the cups, the swords, and the discs. These very four emblems or symbols appear in the heart of the Gaelic tradition, the Celtic tradition, in what are called the 13 treasures of Ireland. So that means that after the fall of Atlantis, when the people that are called the Atlanteans, or the wise ones of old, settled on Ireland, and they were called the Gaels. It's just that the Gaels is just a word that meant the pure ones or the noble ones. They brought with them the famous 13 treasures of Britain. But of those 13 treasures, four were, guess what? A wand, a sword, a cup, a cauldron, and a plate, like a disc. So this is 5,000-6,000 years BC, and believe me, the myths even come from before that. So very, very far back in time, you have these prototypes, and it's clear that those turn up then later in the playing cards. But the cards as we know them today, like if somebody went and pulled a deck off, a shelf in a bookstore and looked at them, those can be identified clearly as Egyptian symbols. And I go into this on the Taroscopes website. If people take the Taroscopes tour, there will be information on the origin of the cards, because the images on the cards are Egyptian. So they must be Egyptian, because the very symbols themselves are all things that only occur. Let's say that they're idioms, cosmological, geometrical, numerical images that only refer to Egypt. From the magician, the fool, the priestess, even though it's slightly, skewed, so you don't see that, when you're looking at them the first moment, because they're symbolic. They're done in a sort of a symbolic way, so that you wouldn't first think they were Egyptian. But anybody who looks at them a little bit closer will see the Egyptian refrain, that each of these represent a god or a goddess or a spiritual cosmological concept from the pantheons of Egypt. And that's where they're actually from. So if they turn up later, it's because they've been transported to different countries who had no metaphysical, or shall we say, had no esoteric tradition. But then being very egotistical, like Greece and Rome and Italy, they want to then say, oh, we invented it. This is just simple hubris. I mean, for goodness sake, in 19th century France, the French occultists wanted to tell you that they invented it all. So, I mean, right, even when it's preposterous, they're telling you that they invented it. So, Italy did the same thing. Rome has done the same thing. They took anything they could from the Oriental Eastern world, like the tarot, and then said they invented it. But the fact of the matter is, it comes to Egypt. And if people are looking for an earlier origin than Egypt, then they have to look to Ireland. And if they want even earlier than that, they got to go back to the old Atlantean, Lemurian periods. This is the thread for sure.
So you're saying that they actually came then from Atlantis and then went to Ireland and then to Egypt.
I believe that that is probably going to be, in time, we'll start discovering the truth of this. I believe that that is true, and that very soon, you know, say if more legitimate archaeological discoveries are made, then I'm pretty sure, or say that the Vatican starts releasing some of its information from underneath its, you know, secret libraries and whatnot, and other Rosicrucian groups start leaking information. You know, time will tell. What I don't care, I don't really know or care what kind of way it's going to be proven,
mm-hmm.
but eventually, I've seen enough that it is already proven. In my mind, it definitely is proven. There's no way that Italy or any of these people, you know, had anything to do with creating the tarot, because they made a botch of it. They made a mess. Some of the feminine symbols of the zodiac and the tarot were masculinized, and there's other extremely stupid things that they've done. So, you know, it's easy for somebody to go and claim credit for something, mm-hmm. but that might be a double-edged sword, because if you claim credit for it, then you also claim the lunacy of the stupidity of the things that you created. So, you know, that's kind of a backfires on them in a way. The real tarot is very pure and very, very mm-hmm. powerful, and has correct gender appropriations and proper correspondences spiritually and esoterically. So when somebody comes along and goes, we did it, you know, like Jewish people want to claim credit for the Kabbalah, well, that doesn't really work, because then they don't know what the Kabbalah does. They don't know what it is. And they've put all this erotic and other symbolism on it, which doesn't belong there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a double-edged sword to come and say, you know, we own it, when in fact, you know, then later it will be proven that your system is full of errors. That's not too much, there's not too much mm-hmm. prestige in doing that. And so as time progresses, we're starting to realize that these claims of ownership are totally illegitimate, you know.
Mm. So you have a book coming out this summer that's on the Irish origins of civilization. And I noticed that actually the website is irishoriginsbook.com for those that want to take a look at it. And I was looking at it because there's information on there about Atlantis as well. So do you feel that... Okay, let me start the question over again. I've always felt that Ireland was the oldest country in the world, and that's just from gut feeling. I've not read anything. I don't know anything for sure. It's just, you know, I had this some kind of a vision that showed me that the beginning of man was created there. And now that I'm finding more and more information that you've written on this, but at the same time, it's like the origins of humans apparently came from gods or goddesses that came from the sky or alien beings or whatever. How do does that ascribe to the fact that we have 12 different tribes? I know that's a big question, but...
No, there's connections. There's okay. connections. The number 12 goes back to Atlantis. When any of these councils set themselves up, there's always been a habit to arrange themselves in 12. 12 is as old as the zodiac. And the most ancient worshippers of the zodiac were the Irish. You're quite right. The Irish is the oldest civilization on earth. And that is completely accepted. That's not some, you know, New Age concept. That is an officially understood fact. However, most of the Irish don't know that. Mm. But then a lot of the people in Ireland haven't the faintest idea about the history of the land that they're living on, and probably couldn't even care less. Mm. So, but the fact remains that Ireland is the oldest civilization on Earth. It is one of the oldest countries on Earth. Its history goes back immeasurably, the reason why we don't know this, the reason why we do not know anything pertaining to the true history of Scotland and Ireland, is because of a massive and age-long and highly funded strategy, a campaign to make absolutely sure that we would not, and that the true histories of these places have been suppressed. So it's not just by some organic, natural, you know, falling off of information or, you know, the lack of books or something like that. No. It's totally been an official, overt action to make sure. So much so that even the taboo that the Vatican had many, you know, centuries ago about that men could not travel to the West in boats, it was forbidden. They came up with a flat world concept. I believe that that was also part of the strategy, that they didn't even want intellectual types of people to travel west to England and Ireland to find out. They only allowed that after they'd already desecrated the land, after the Roman invasions and so on, when they, you know, were able to go in there and really decimate and steal and rob and pillage and massacre. Only then, you know, now you can go, because it's all been lost. But sure, the number 12 that turns up in the 12 tribes of Israel, for instance, what they don't tell you about the 12 tribes of Israel is that all the names of the 12 tribes, including their symbolism, is Irish. all the names of the 12 tribes of Israel are Gaelic in origin, and also the symbolism that is used to demarcate the 12 tribes has zodiological symbolism coming out of the Irish mystery schools that also were set up in Egypt. Now, people have, you know, a hard time getting their head around that, but it's easy. All you got to do is watch something like The Name of the Rose, the movie, and go into studying Christian history. That when, after Christianity rose from France, from England, from Italy, you see, all monks from the Dominican Order and the Franciscan Order and the Cistercian Order, all spread out throughout the world, just like that movie shows you, roving here, roving there, setting up little colleges, being teachers, you see. And this is in much, much more modern times. So then when you tell people that the Druids had a massive worldwide college in which high Druids on horseback traveled to all parts of the world and set up great colleges, they look at you and can't believe it, because those colleges, of course, you know, they're not there anymore. But the fact of the matter is that long before the destruction of the world Druidic colleges, there was this great society of Druids, the enlighteners of the world, and that even the pharaohs turned to the Irish when they wanted knowledge, when they wanted to understand the theocracy, when they wanted to be initiated into the mysteries. And the original Jews, the original Levites, it was exactly the same story. The original Phoenicians, the original Greeks, the Achaeans, you know, all the ancient people, even in Banaras in India, has been the only two places in the world where round towers are found of identical nature, is in Ireland and is in India. So these round towers are identical, and they're Irish in origin. Now, the Indians called the Irish the Arya, or the Aryan. So when you're hearing about the Aryan invasions of northern India, you're hearing about the Irish origin, the Irish invasions, because the word Irish was not spelt with an I, it was spelt with an A, the Arish or the Ari. And the Ari is a familiar word to those who've really done their homework. And it means the golden ones, you know, or the ones of knowledge, the ones who worship the sun, and so on. So this book that's coming out in the summer is going to revolutionize what we know about the Irish origins of civilization, and has a bearing on America, because you have your mound builders here, and you have your Anastasi, you see. Mm-hmm. And these are also Celtic. Yeah, these are Celtic-related people. Like the Indians have been telling you. I mean, the Native American Indians are forever saying, hey, we didn't do it, but we'll soon tell you who did. But nobody's listening. The Smithsonian and these other people have a vested interest in canceling what these people say, because it's fundamentally important for the world order that we believe that civilization spread from the east to the west. And the opposite is true. And it's only later migrations, very later migrations of eastern people because of drought and because of war, who moved westward, that history starts and goes, there you go, see, look, we're showing you that these tribes moved from the east to the west, and that's how all of this symbolism and all of this mysticism comes into the West. Now, that is one of the biggest lies in this world. It has already been overthrown by American scholars who are suppressed, and my work follows on from their work to show that, no, this, the elements of civilization moved from the west to the east, first from the fall of Atlantis, then the regrouping on the British Isles, and then from the British Isles to the Scandinavian countries, you see, and then out to the rest of the world in far more ancient times. And once somebody wraps their head around this west-to-east movement, then they're going to understand things. Then they're going to make real sense of the history in the world and have true conclusions and true answers. If you believe the opposite, the east-to-west, then you're going to understand nothing. Yeah. A few anecdotes might be explained, but we're going to be in the situation we are now, where nobody knows anything, and nobody can tell you anything about the races and the cultures and the tribes and the migrations, because it's a false picture that we've been given.
Well, I want to pick up on that after a short break on what the real reason behind that would be, and you know, how that's going to affect us in the future as far as pursuing you know, our lives, our history, our mythology that we create as we go about our daily lives, how that's going to affect those in the future for us as well. So we will be right back. We're going to take a short break. And when we return, more of Michael Zarian.
Now kindly girls, one sound that rocked the nation.
Yeah! Full Moon Radio, right here on the OmniSound Radio 1 Network.
You're listening to Full Moon Radio on the OmniSound Radio 1 Network.
For those of you that don't know about Full Moon Mayhem, you can find the website at fullmoonmayhem.com. You can also visit the archives there. We have archives on fullmoonradio.com of the shows. We have all the way back from October, so of last year. So there's plenty of interesting information there, as well as old shows and stuff that Sandy did way before. Well, we've only been doing interviews since April, so before that time, we did a lot of stuff on primarily
our own stuff.
We just kind of took over and did a topic, and then we just went with it. But it was a lot of fun. And
that was fun.
It was a lot of fun before we had continuous streaming with guests and stuff. So sounds like we're okay now. So we'll go ahead and bring Michael up and. And we'll bring him right back on. Are you there, Michael?
Yes, Laura, I'm right here.
Oh, I'm sorry about the break. We ran into a little bit of a problem with some static, so I wanted to make sure we had it all cleared up before we brought you back on. Okay.
Right on.
Before the break, we were talking about
the reason why some people think that the spread of society or the ultimate beginnings of society were actually different than what is the true history. And you were saying?
Yes, the concept about the East-West movement, that is mostly a lie. And we're talking about, obviously migrations took place, but these were of a much later date. There was a large set of migrations after the destruction of the temple, so-called Temple of Jerusalem in the 7th century B.C., and then there was a lot of migrations even up to 1066, the famous time of William the Conqueror, into Britain. But for people within the British Israelite, you see, and the Zionist movement to be saying that these late migrations are the reason for the civilizing of Britain is probably one of the most preposterous and outrageous things that ever could be said. And unfortunately, this is believed by a lot of people, especially people who, you know, maybe have not done their own homework. So we're hoping to clarify that. And even though the book is about Ireland, because remember, you know, let's look at it this way. We know that Judeo-Christianity is extremely patristic or patriarchal, right? It's God is a male.
Right.
Its heroes are masculine. Its entire ideology is earth unaffirming. It is not ecocentric. It is very phallocentric and very patricentric. Then tell me how it could be that such people moving eastward could then seed civilization in the Druids and the Celts, who we know were matristic, goddess worshipping, grove loving, and tree worshipping, and all the rest of it. So even if you accept the picture of the Druids and the Celts as is officially known, then one thing stands out, and that these people had a whole pantheon of goddesses. They worshipped the moon, they worshipped the stars, you know, they worshipped the groves, they worshipped and revered animals, they were lovers of the earth. How on earth could there be a connection? But you'd be amazed, many of the academica and most of the world, most of Judeo-Christianity absolutely buys into this lie that it is this Eastern movement of patristic tribes that then seeded Druidism and then seeded, you know, in Ireland, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
No, of course not. And you know something? There's hundreds more anecdotes like that. It's nonstop. But unfortunately, the original scholars who wrote about this, Anna Wilkes and Conor McAdari, they lived at the turn of the century, of the 19th century. So their works have been completely forgotten and are mostly unavailable. And other scholars, too, who've written about this, you know, have been suppressed. And then when we had the revival, the famous Celtic revival of the 1970s and moving up now into the New Age movement, for some bizarre reason, the Celtic tradition has not been properly dealt with. You have lots of Celtic scholars out there, but not too many are that great, you know, with the exception of perhaps, you know, Caitlin Matthews and John Matthews. You know, on the whole, it's mostly rubbish, and it doesn't go into the true origins of Ireland at all. It just kind of is based on the time of Christianity, and then, oh my goodness, we need Celtic studies to come back, and, you know, wish we didn't have this sort of, you know, Christian suppression, blah, blah, blah. I mean, if they think that is Celtic studies, you know, they're wrong. There's a whole history of Celtic studies long, long before. So it's taken time. But the other aspect of this book is connected to Egypt, actually, because, as I've been saying, there was a World Druidic College that helped to found the libraries of Alexandria, the great libraries in Benares, and in other places in the world were actually based on the Arya. Now, it was only the fall of Egypt, the real destruction of Egypt's purity, happened around the time of Akhenaten. So the other aspect of the book, you see, is to show what kind of forces, as you were implying in your question earlier, what kind of forces then would have downplayed Ireland, and what are the consequences of that for us today? What is our religion, our mysticism? You know, does it benefit by this suppression, or are we losing out? And we are losing out. But see, the question then arises, if somebody suppressed the great cultures of Ireland, what would they have wanted to do that for? What's the reason? And the reason is, you see, is because the modern Leviathans that we have today, these Judeo-Christian paradigms, which are responsible for the slaughter and the degradation of the humankind, and for the, you know, the suppression and marginalization of the spirit, for making people into half-wits so they don't use their whole brain, so that they're no longer connected to nature and to the heavens. These leviathans, these pernicious leviathans, could not have come into the world because they're parasitical and monstrous. And had the normal druidical, Celtic, religion of the stars, of the earth, had it survived in its unadulterated form, you see, then the earth would have been too pure. The religion, everybody would have laughed these Judeo-Christian paradigms out the door. They never would have been able to be sustained. And in fact, they weren't sustained. That's why they always had a military wing to make sure that wherever they went, they first slaughtered everybody else who was there. You know, just like we know the history of Christianity is that the emperors, the first emperors in Italy, slaughtered everybody in mass and sent out armed, you know, troops to go and kill all the Druids. Because it was understood that you're not going to seed the world with this false, tyrannous, anti-spiritual religions if the pure, unadulterated form, you see, still exists. And if the Druidical teachings that every man is his own priest and every woman her own priestess, and the only altar to God or to the divinity is the earth, if you have people taught that, then they're not going to accept these popes and potentates, you see, and governmental and religious leviathans. They'll simply not accept it. So you've got to completely change the paradigm. And that change, that turning around of the metaphysical ship of state, is not something that happened overnight. It's been going on since the Roman invasion of Ireland until pretty much the modern times. It's taken 2,000 years to basically erase what was before and see to create the kind of disgusting, dysfunctional, spiritually arrested, you know, civilizations that we have today. This is the predicament. So yeah, my interest is always, you know, I love ancient history. I think it's very interesting, but I'm dealing in solutions as to what on earth has gone wrong now, and that if we need to get back to a pure kind of understanding of divinity and earth and religion, we're going to need to know where we came from, because we did it right the first time. Our ancestors did it right the first time. These were the people who built the pyramids and who created the great music of old, you see, and who had the healing and the ability, because they understood the divinity of human beings, which has been raped from the world. So it's not just some historical anecdotal thing about, you know, okay, tribes moving here, tribes moving there, the rise and fall of Atlantis. All of this stuff is not as interesting. The idea is that what was going on in those times, we have a wall of lies between us and the past that needs to be clarified so that human beings can understand their legacy and understand where they're going.
Do you believe that the changes are happening, that we're at the end of Pisces? And that people are becoming more psychic and are able to heal their own bodies without any help?
All of these things are possible. I just finished a 6-part DVD series called the Origins and Oracle series. And one of those DVD sets is called Divination and the Goddess Tradition. Mm-hmm. And in that one, we talk a lot about the return of what might be described as the mystery of being. The mystery of being was always preserved by the women of the world and the so-called goddess tradition. Men were keepers of the art of doing, as we well know, because it's all do in our world today.
Mm-hmm.
And the art of being, you know, apart from some maybe Eastern, you know, mysticism type of thing, the art of being is completely lost. Now, women were the keepers of being, but women have been seduced away into the world of doing, in order to be accepted by the masculine world, because they've been left no choice. It's either die or join us. So in order to matriculate, women have kind of often got off the track of where they used to be, except people within, you know, the New Age metaphysical movement who are trying desperately to find out again what their real role is, because they were the keepers of the mystery of being, and they were the teachers of this mystery to the men. The men who were the doers, just like any symphony, just like any phase of life, there's up and there's down, there's in and there's out, and there's this quality that man needs to be reminded of, which is the art of being. And women were his teachers in this. Women taught their children this. This is the old grandmother tradition. And of course, when women then desisted from teaching this great art of being, then many, many secrets were lost about the whole mind, about the self-healing that you're talking about, Sandy, that the qualities, these other right brain qualities and the qualities of the light body and the intuitive abilities, you see, they're still there, but my God, they're minimal, they're barely, you know, people have lost even the idea of how to communicate with the animals. You know, there's so much has been lost in this super materialistic, super lit world. So in this particular DVD, we go into this very heavily about the ending of the age of Pisces and what it'll mean. And that the fact that opposite Pisces is Virgo, the sign of the Virgin, you see. There's a lot of cosmological, astrological symbolism there. We also go into this whole mystery of the art of being. We also talk about technology and what technology really is, that it was man's attempt to rival the creative powers of the female. because there's been an age-long, and I can't overstress this, it's been an age-long what one might call envy. But
yes.
The normal envy of a human being, you know, the average envy that somebody normally listening to us might experience in their life, magnified thousands of times over genetic time. A deep and abiding envy within the male consciousness. It's almost the reverse of Freud's penis envy that women have. Mm-hmm. And he's right, women do have that envy of the male's power. However, there's a reverse envy that has also come down through time of man to woman, because man looks at woman as the birth. Man takes birth through the female body, and there's nothing he's been able to do can change that. So they understand that God, the ancients realized that God gives birth to all things, but woman gives birth to man. Therefore, woman looks like she's higher up the ontological ladder and closer to the gods. And each man noted this and realized that he was sort of subservient or in a way inferior to woman because woman was closer to the gods. Mm-hmm. And then as this particular kind of reverence for female continued down through the centuries, down through man's phylogenetic life, through the racial life of man, it started to turn from reverence into great envy. And therefore, the birth of science, what we call the birth of science and technology, is man's attempt to rival the creative powers of the female.
Right.
And this has to be understood because it explains a lot of technology. When we understand why men refer to everything as she, you see their inventions, why there is this phallic drive. And man himself has got off his natural track of what he should be doing because of this envy. So it's like, you know, you're trying to undo one knot and several other knots get tied up. Man, by his envy, not resolving and not coming back to reverence for the feminine principle within himself, has now gone down a false track of science and technology in a mere stupid, asinine attempt to rival the creative powers of the female. And neither gender knows any of this. And of course, if you don't diagnose the problem, well, then you can't find the cure. So we, in this this 8-hour long DVD, we go into this meticulously about what are the real roots of the rivalry between the genders. And until this masculine and feminine are united inside a human being, because that was the goal of the Druids. That was the goal of all the mystery schools. All original yoga, all original metaphysics, all original religion. And believe it or not, even all original science. But certainly all original magic. All of it. The some reason for all of those things was to deal with androgyny. Not of a sexual nature, of course, but mentally, spiritually, psychically. The unification of the masculine and the feminine principle. That's what religion taught originally. That's what yoga was all about. In fact, the very word yoga means the unification or binding. Magic, science, all the ancient things. Now, obviously, we can see that these things today are not about that. They're about division. Look how many denominations there are within one religion. Look at how science is nothing but division and divide, divide, divide. In fact, their own faculties, they can't even unite. They can't even glue together their own faculties in a kind of a holistic way. So we are dealing with something here that is tremendously insidious, the division of knowledge, the division of man.
That's
and
true.
unless man understands his feminine principle, and unless women understand their feminine principle, because we're talking about the principles here of masculine and feminine, not male and female. Unfortunately, women have been seduced over to the masculine side in order to matriculate in this crazy, over-masculinized world. And that's hurting the world. It's hurting males and it's hurting females.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be a reappraisal, just like Freud and Jung were saying, of the feminine principle, what that really is. Or better said, the art of being as opposed to doing. Because we are going to be in a state of malnutrition if we keep planting our seeds of the future in the art of doing. That only yields a 50% of the crop. We also need to be rooting ourselves in the art of being. And because we're not doing that, that's why we're having more schizophrenia, more bipolarity, more, ADD children. All of the spiritual aspects of us, both male and female, are no longer rooted. The roots are dead. They've dried up. And we're putting all of our roots in the art of doing, in this culture that says we have to overachieve and overaccomplish, you know?
Yes,
and this is the mantra.
Well,
yeah,
it does change. It does change the brain chemistry, though, when you're using, you know, your left and right brain at the same time. I know there has been studies on that, especially with, you know, using a computer, playing games and so forth. You're using the creative side and you're using the logical side at the same time, so that there is a change in the synapse. So, yes, you're right.
earlier you were talking about the power of the cards and the divination arts. The same point is 50% of the DVD I'm referring to, The Divination and the Goddess, goes into why we should be using those. Because just as you said, if you're not using your, well, if you're using, it's like when you use the whole mind, you have full intentionality. When you're using just the left brain, then it becomes very difficult to accomplish anything that's good for your soul. You might be a good functionary and be able to function, you know, in a way that society will reward you. Well, everybody's pretty good at that, jumping through those hoops and matriculating. But what are we doing for oneself? What is one doing, you see, for the rest of their being, cultivating that? So we are dealing with a pathological situation in which the human being is very schizoid. They're not in inner balance. Mm. And, the oracle within, the unconscious mind, is not being utilized anymore. This is what is also referred to as by the goddesses in ancient mythology. The goddesses represented this art of being, the mystery that can come out of there. So the idea is to show people that these metaphysical arts are the means by which we learn this. It's not something that is lost forever. There are operating manuals to be able to do this, even though we weren't taught this in school, when we were made into these sort of robots to function just for the system. But the divination arts, astrology, tarot, you know, Kabbalah, numerology, these are the mirrors of oneself. And the image that they reflect back at you is not a half image, you know, or a fractured image. When you study these things, like studying your own chart, for instance, in my classes I would always talk to people about, you know, we're going to start with your chart. You're going to learn how to work your own chart first, because who knows you better than you do.
Right.
So when you work with these tools, then the reflection that is shown back at you is your whole self for the first time in your life, because your parents have not reflected back your whole self. And your peers and your teachers and the priests and the politicians are not people who are interested in your whole self. They're only interested in that tiny little area of functionality. And as long as you jump through those hoops and matriculate according to those standards, then you're needed, then you're wanted. But the inner psyche knows the falseness of that and is in constant conflict. And that's why people are in a great state of anxiety, because they know they're living a lie. You have anxiety because people know that the way they're living is false. But a lot of people then don't know what to do when they accept that. And where to go, you see, and what to remedy it, because the diagnosis is also wrong. They go, oh, there's nothing, you know, just take these drugs, take these pharmaceuticals,
exactly,
you know, and whatever. And society also tries to appease the inner angst. But I keep teaching in my work that angst and fear and some of these dark guardians, even anger, are very positive. They're just showing you that something's wrong in the body politic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fall in love with those negative emotions, because those negative emotions are actually guiding you in a way to say that your life isn't perfect. Things are not all rosy. So instead of resisting them, listen to them and go, okay, then why am I feeling like this? Let me try and diagnose this then, because I'm not going to censor my own emotions. I'm going to listen to them and see, once you start doing that, oh, there's a massive change in your life, even though there may be upheaval in the domestic situation when people, you know, don't understand you, because remember, if you start doing this, other people don't do it around you, so you might stand out and might get a lot of disapproval from the people around you. But nevertheless, you're going to feel a lot better inside when you're no longer censoring natural organic emotions that arise because you're under attack.
That's right.
Under attack from a system that's rotten. So this is again, we're not going to be able to get to this utopian Aquarian age of the great healing until we first confront the darkness, you see, that must come out holistically in between. So yes, there is going to be cleansing. Yes, there's going to be healing. But in the meantime, there's going to be also a release of toxicity collectively. We're already seeing that in the world at large, and it's going to happen individually. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners totally understand what I'm talking about here. I hope they do. Because there's going to be this toxic release, and that toxic release is perfectly logical and normal and should be loved. It comes with the territory if you're doing the true work. Then you will go through these, you know, periods of the underworld and periods of toxic processing. And the world, the people of the lie who don't want to do this or do not want to face this toxic release, well, they have strategies that you need to know about as well, because you might end up being the person they're processing their darkness through, and you don't want that.
No.
So there's a double-edged sword to this as well.
You know, I've noticed something, that when my family is out of control and they're kind of, just moody, we have like a group family get together and we just talk. And I notice that it's because their egos are out of control, and like they're wanting something that's not within their own spirit. And so we kind of try to, we remove the ego. And I had read that that's the way to enlightenment, is to not to have an ego and just to be a being person, if that makes sense.
Well, we need an ego just in the same way that a corporation needs a office manager.
Right.
What has happened, though, is that the office manager has suddenly got the idea into his head that he's the executive, you know, or the owner of the corporation. It's like the gatekeeper at the lodge, at the gate, the lodge, who thinks he owns the mansion. So what has happened is, because we have given so much authority to our egos, it is now completely in a wrong job description. But the ego is very necessary. So one must, again, as I said, when you're dealing with the darker emotions, the same thing applies to the ego. One needs a healthy relationship with the ego. And, of course, we're not taught that in school. And we have very, very negative models of the ego. Now, when you're talking about sitting with the family and reviewing all of these things, that's very necessary, because what that's doing is creating chi. It's creating new chi. To solve any problem, and chi, of course, just means energy. So in our lives, because there is often we've become very morbid and very static. So when problems build up, they're not really problems. They're just something like anything. Any organic kind of toxicity, like, you know, dust gathers on a table, you know, fruit will rot. There's a natural catabolic action in the world. You can't remonstrate against it. You just have to accept it. And then you bring out the detergents to do the cleaning. What we do with our psyche is we don't clean it. Our emotions and our psyche is never cleansed. And, you know, the way to cleanse it, of course, is to bring in chi, either to talk about the problem, to face it honestly, you see, to change the setting, to change even your physical ambiance, to take walks in nature, to get closer to nature again. A lot of these very simple things that break this monotony, break the chi, we don't do. And we don't know how to do. Whereas in some, you know, Eastern lands, they're kind of more familiar with that. So we need to relearn some, you know, certain subjects like geomancy and feng shui and all of these kinds of things that help to bring in new energy. Mm-hmm. Because that's all really it means. But see, unfortunately, people don't bring in new energy in their minds.
That's
they get very static over the years. It's just like living in the same room or the same house, you know. Would you never clean it? Never change the furniture. Well, imagine that that is exactly like the psyche of most people who've never opened the windows. They're very insecure. They're very afraid of not only the world and external people and external challenges, but they're also deeply threatened by inner changes within their own unconscious. You see, they have a very morbid ego. So it's not that the ego is wrong. It's just that, let's say that the ego is a mansion. That mansion has become rotten. So if the ego is working properly, functioning correctly, it'll be a wonderful thing.
Well, that makes sense.
The thing has become morbid, like a muscle that's been never used, you know, and if you don't use it, it's like they even know that about the brain. If you don't use it, you don't read, you don't learn new languages, you don't listen to music, then, of course, you know, you have a chance of even dying younger. This has even been noticed even by, you know, Western people within medicine, that people die younger because they're not using their brains. They become senile, you know, earlier. Well, let's just transpose that understanding to the level of a psyche in totality. That people live in a very, very repetitive, morbid way and have lost these simple little zen ways of, you see, transforming and changing the energy and bringing new thoughts in and bringing new understandings in. And, of course, people, you know, who work within the metaphysical tradition, who are downloading lots of new ideas for the human race and bringing in new concepts, they meet a lot of resistance from these kinds of people who have never even experienced once bracketing the, you know, the knowledge that they think that they know. So this whole concept also then, about the end of the age of Pisces, you know, what are we heading towards 2012? Well, it's basically, as I have always said, it's going to be a period in which people are going to be forced to do that. Because they haven't done it by choice, they're not going to be compelled by circumstances to see the error of their ways, both politically, you know, and religiously and domestically, on these three fronts especially. And then inwardly, and it's going to be very, very threatening for a lot of people. However, the ultimate goal will, of course, be a positive one. It's just a holistic process. But most of the world's people are not holistic and don't know the principles of holistic healing. And a lot of people who claim that they do also don't. So there's going to be a lot of masks coming down to expose the false ones who keep, you know, saying with words they understand certain these teachings, but in fact they don't live it. You know, that's also going to be a problem.
Well, you know, I think our culture has changed tremendously over the years as well. I mean, we have gone from a society where it was okay for the social time when people would kick back, like on, you know, Sunday afternoon and talk, and even before TV was, like, you know, the biggest thing that people used for entertainment, you know, there was a lot more social gathering, a lot more quiet time, and now it's like you almost have to fill up every minute of the day just to be happy, even if it's just watching TV. If you're sitting there doing nothing, you know, you feel like you should be doing something. You have to go find, you know, a Game Boy or a telephone or, a, you know, anything just to keep you busy. And I think that's what's really dumbed down society is that, you know, you're almost running away constantly from your spirituality by doing that. It's an electronic bombardment of lots of things. And well, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about knowing yourself. For those of you that would like to find out more about what Michael was talking about earlier, he does have a website at thetaroscopes.com. It's TAROSCOPES.com. If you go there, click on the Taroscopes tour. And if you go there, you can click on the video tour. It's wonderful. Sandy and I watched some of that stuff earlier. And the kind of stuff that you're hearing right now, you'll be able to hear that and more. And Michael is such a good speaker and very well spoken on these videos as well. So you'll thoroughly enjoy that, I'm sure. Well, we're going to take this quick break. We're going to play some music. And then when we get back, we'll have more with Michael Zarian and on Tarot and lots of different things.
Produced by Mayhem Media, is brought to you by Omnisound Radio 1 Network.
welcome back to Full Moon Radio. Our guest tonight, Michael Dazarian, is telling us, talking to us about all kinds of interesting things. He's got a full entourage of interesting stuff to listen to, things he's researched, things he's experienced, from the Tarot to origins of humanity, to Atlantis and Egypt. It's just a fascinating discussion that we're having here. So let's bring Michael back on, and if you'd like to ask him a question, you can go to the OmnisoundRadio1.net site. We do have a chat room there, so all you have to do is click on the chat, or you can go to fullmoonradio.com and click on the chat button there as well, and that will bring you right into the chat. Now, you will have to sign up if you haven't been there before. You'll have to register, but it's worth it because there's we're in there, and we could take questions for Michael if you'd like to go in and post one. Welcome back, Michael.
Oh, thank you.
So when we before we took the break, basically going over, gosh, so much. I mean, it was kind of like a mind meld there for a while. Sandy and I were just kind of immersed in it.
Yeah, I love it.
But basically, you know, you were talking about knowing yourself and realizing that, you know, enlightenment comes within a person and not just from what else, the outer world. And we need to be more centered in ourselves as well as bring back the feminine, allow ourselves to be not so much doers in some respects, but also, you know, just to be.
And we also need to understand that that is not an inactive state in the way that we might first think of it. When somebody talks about being, and when somebody talks about, you know, non-activity, that's not to say that it's not full of action. It has its own kind of action.
Uh-huh.
And martial artists know this, you know, this principle. It's a way that, you know, again, part of the problem of being so overcompensated into this world of super activity and hyper drive, and as you said earlier, hyper stimulation of just all this stuff that, you know, keeps us from being centered and being still. By moving, because we're like that, when somebody then talks about the other state, it appears very threatening and very dubious to individuals who've totally lost the, you know, that understanding that that quiet place is not inactive. It has its own kind of creative action, and that the journey of enlightenment is twofold. It is both a focus on your goals and a focus on an intention towards your spiritual goal, or to listening to your intuition and listening to your guides. But it is also another type of action as well. And it is the action of keeping out the toxicity that's holding you back from that kind of growth. And of course, we know that that is called adversarial energy. The adversarial energy that can manifest even from with your own thinking, which is, of course, a major problem for most people. Their own thought processes and their own lack of self-esteem or their lack of egocentricity or their conditioning from their parents, all the inner personal resistance. And then, of course, there's external adversarial energy as well from society and from the place of work and from Big Brother, the government. So we're dealing in a situation in which there's a lot of adversarial action. And if you do not keep up walls against that, if you do not have your boundaries set and you're not able to identify those adversarial agencies, then what good is telling me that, you know, that you're on the spiritual path? In any kind of true mystery school situation, and in any kind of true shamanistic milieu, there's always an understanding that there is a yin and there is a yang. There is a growth and there is a breaking down. There is a Shiva and there is a Shakti energy. And it seems strange to me that the Western world, and America in particular, has kind of lost this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's astrological reasons for this, you know.
Yeah.
America is a very Jupiterian country. And that's always about building up and having and acquiring and getting and owning and possessing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all fine and dandy, but, you know, that can, if taken too far, that's just another kind of materialism.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know what I'm saying? It's just, okay, the rich man wants a Mercedes and a good-looking wife or whatever and a swimming pool. And the spiritual man says he wants God and he wants enlightenment. But is the intention not just material? The intention can be just as materialistic. So intention is very, very important. But if you are not having that intention focused, then what good is the intention? It's like a river that's broken its levee, it's broken its banks, and it's just flowing everywhere, or a vine that's creeping all over the ground and is not growing straight, so which is a detriment. So human beings have a lot of passion and a lot of intention, but unless they're working with the divine arts, these divination arts, mm-hmm. it's probably likely that their intention is not focused correctly. And this is why there's a lack of success and a lack of achievement and a lack of empowerment, which then backfires when people go, listen, I'm fed up with all of this spiritual stuff. I tried it and it didn't work. I've been into that and, you know, I'm totally jaded now and I'm going back to the system. You know, it didn't work for me and these people are charlatans and whatnot. And people get jaded. Well, that's because you've been mistaught. If you're working with the right systems, you will be able to focus your energy. You know, an arrow is useless without the bolt. So there's a certain rapport. And as I said, there's also a understanding and a focus on the fact that you can be better than you are and that you can live the life that you want to live. But at the same time, there's also a very critical and understanding of what is blocking your development and blocking mankind's development. So it's twofold. It's a twofold process towards enlightenment.
You know, I have always heard that signs and symbols will help you to, that God talks to you through signs and symbols, and that I heard that on your website that you think that we need to develop a symbol literacy.
Yeah.
Or that.
On we talk about that a lot on the Divination and the Goddess DVD, but
right.
I did a separate DVD on that. It's another DVD I did in the series. It's 8 hours long, and it's called The Subversive Use of Sacred Symbolism in the Media. And that was mm-hmm. made specifically on that subject because I am such a strong believer in that. I believe that one of the darkest forms of this adversarial energy, especially from the external agencies, is the corruption of the ancestral reservoir of the sacred symbols that once used to be used for magical and yogic and religious purposes. So it's not that I'm against people advertising their products, as some people who've interviewed me think that's what I'm critiquing. I'm not. I'm just saying that you can advertise your product, but how are you advertising your product?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have a nice rock or pop video, but what is that video full of, you know, if it's showing very negative symbolisms and so on. So there is a tremendous assault on the ancestral reservoir of the people's unconscious by way of advertising, by way of television.
Mm-hmm.
And it involves sacred spiritual symbols that have been used for millennia. And therefore, they're in our racial memory, and they're assigned to or correspond to spiritual states. But then when some company comes along and slaps that symbol on a bar of, you know, soap or something, or some stupid cosmetic, or something that just appeals to the lower chakras, you know, and appeals to the appetite body, well, then that is the pure definition of something evil. That something sacred, which was once sacred, is now taken and put on something that is basically for your material detriment, to make you physically impoverished, and to make you also a victim of your senses and so on. What, my goodness, what greater definition could there be of something negative? Look at the way women, for instance, are portrayed in the media. Here are women, the keepers of being, the great oracles of old, right? Constantly shown headless, constantly shown incompetent, mm-hmm. constantly shown as complete dorks. This is how the media is showing the archetypes. You know, it's just one example. Animals are treated this way. The father figure is treated this way. There's so much negative treatment of children in the media, and especially the image of the female. So we then have an archetype, an inner understanding of what femininehood is or femalehood is. Men and women both carry within them this imprint, shall we say, of what a woman must be. Then, in some stupid beer commercial or some other garbage right. commercial that they have, they're taking that model, that image, that, you know, aspect of femininity, and they're degrading it. So then we have a culture now of men who have intense hatred towards women. We have a culture of crime and violence since the 1960s specifically has become epidemic. They say that the cult of the serial killer didn't even exist prior to 1950. That may be true or not true, but certainly we know that there's a rise in tremendous crime against womankind. Why would that be? You know, there's more delinquency. It has to do with not just advertising, but it has to do with the demolition of the sacred images that we carry in our ancestral memory relating to the world, relating to nature, relating to animals, relating to, you know, the world order. The world that's around us. It's a tremendous, I consider it an absolute psychic tyranny.
Hmm.
And that's particularly why, you know, I spend so much time teaching children and working with children. And the beautiful thing about is that when you start to show them this, when you start to deal with children in a symbolic way, oh my goodness, there's
they
a tremendous
understand.
Transformation.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that's
wonderful.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they really, really do.
We were having a little bit of problems with my youngest daughter. She was kind of hanging around with the wrong crowd for a minute, and I asked for a symbol and or a sign, and my husband walked out of the front door, and he said he was almost hit by a running deer in our neighborhood, and I live in a suburb. And I've been there for 30 years, and there are no deer. But he jumped, this little deer jumped in my backyard and just kind of felt real afraid and very cornered and then took off. And also the deer looked at me as I was looking at him or her through the kitchen window. And I felt like if you're always knowing about the symbols and you kind of look for signs, you tend to know what they mean. And for me...
Yeah.
You know, I felt that the deer represented that she was delicate, but she was with not in her environment, and so I called her on it, and I was very right. So
that's right. We give our own meaning to the symbols. This is the other beautiful thing of working with symbols, is that there's no A to Z created by some know-it-all about what symbols mean. Why I keep on mentioning for people to work with symbols is because that opens the door to your own inner intelligence, where you start bestowing the meaning. You know, so you're not letting Madison Avenue do it, and you're not letting Big Brother do it, and you're not letting Hollywood do it, you know, and you're not even letting, you know, the artist external to yourself do it. You are opening the door to your own archetypal, you know, family, which is, the tarot is, of course, the greatest, we're talking about symbols, they are the greatest collection of symbols in the world. The tarot is just, it's like one chapter of the greater book of symbolism, is the way I like to describe it. It's the master chapter, but that doesn't mean that somebody cannot associate their own colors, their own vibrations, their own imagery, and make their own tarot, make their own archetypal family of symbols, you know.
Yeah, I think that's why there's so many oracle decks out there, is they've kind of taken the same idea and then just gone a little bit different direction.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. We do have a question from the chat room. Somebody wanted to know that since you had talked about Celtic myths and traditions, if you had any knowledge of leprechauns, banshees, fairy folk, elves, and giants.
This is part of the Celtic tradition. And even though the story of all of that has been grossly misinterpreted in later times, it really deals with the energy body. These beings, I also believe, existed. And I believe that these beings may have been pre-diluvian entities, meaning that they lived before the flood. And some of them might have been the result of genetic hybridization, because if people have read my Atlantis book, they'll know that genetic hybridization was really on the cards, you know, prior to 11,000 years ago. We had a major pole shift on this planet around about 13,500 years ago. So prior to that time, genetic hybridization was really the business. These alien forces that invaded our planet were busy doing that. And people who know my work, I talk about the Minotaur and the Centaur, and the unicorn and the dragon beings. And also, I believe that some of the elves and the dwarves and the goblins and all of these mythological characters also may have been, and the giants, may have been in the product of genetic hybridization. Now, I also think that if it wasn't genetic hybridization that that was the reason for the creation of these beings, especially your caller there was talking about the giants, then there is another reason for those kinds of beings, and that has to do with the radiation fallout of the great war of the gods that all the mythologies talk about. So for people who do not know, in the ancient legends, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, the Norse Edda, even the Mayan codices, you see, they're talking about the great war, the great conflict between the gods. And this was a physical, basically atomic style war fought with super weaponry, just in exactly the same way that the legends are talking about. Now, what happens when you have a massive war of that kind of scale? You have also radiation fallout. It's well known. And I believe that there was radiation fallout of a massive dimension about 13,000 years ago on this planet. And that this is probably one of the things that caused mutations within the pineal gland and the pituitary and the organs and glands of humanoid beings, creating smallness, dwarfism, and also creating giantism. There may have been nuclear fallout even in ages before 13,500 years ago, and this may have caused even the dinosaurs and the large reptilian lizard-type beings. It may have caused certain clairvoyance, because we know that radiation has all sorts of effects. It may have caused discoloring of the skin, which is why we hear about so many gods being blue, like Krishna was blue, and that, you know, we have Sir Percival being pied, you know, being sort of sort of blotchy. The skin was blotchy. Mm-hmm. We have strange cyclopean beings with more than one eye or other deformities. And Irish mythology is full of the deformed gods. They're always talking about the gods who are deformed. And I'm thinking that either this could be for two reasons. One is actual genetic manipulation, or it could be results of the great fallout, one or the two, or both. And today, when people give birth to freaks, when they give birth to, you know, strange-looking children, and some of them can be very bizarre, and, of course, they're sequestered in the backwards of these mental hospitals. Also, these are throwbacks to either crazy genetic experiments that were done in ancient times, or, unfortunately, they also could be the results of these the radiation fallout. So we've got some questions here about the fauna, the flora and the fauna, and also about these strange, hybrid type of creatures that existed, and also the fairies and so on and so forth. And in Celtic mythology, you have the idea that the gods also are able to change their form, go into their light body, you see, and assume these different kinds of forms. So there's lots of questions here, you know, that need to be answered. Hopefully, maybe I will have a chapter on this in the forthcoming book. I don't know as yet.
I know that, you know, in Sumerian tales, they talk about, some of that, seeding of the planet. But then also in the Bible, you know, there's the stories of these creatures that were, you know, the centaurs and some of these things that were actually, like, created.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, whether, you know, it might have been a combination. But
I think it was a combination of something, but we can't rule out that if you have an enormous thermal global nuclear war taking place, then obviously we have after effects. And I don't think this has been looked into at all. In fact, I don't know anyone who's looked into it. First of all, very few people know about these ancient wars. They're very resistant to the mm-hmm. idea that there was ancient civilizations and a war of the gods. But obviously, if you take the myths literally like I basically do,
right.
I have a great faith in our ancestors. I don't believe that they were just sitting around the fire shooting the breeze of an evening because they had nothing better to do. I'm convinced that these were semi-enlightened beings who absolutely had a story to tell, who had been through an unimaginable trauma, who understood that the world of the old was destroyed, just like the Bible is saying,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to try and communicate to us in the way that they were able. But, of course, in those days, they couldn't say radiation fallout. So they would just say the blemishes or the mark of the gods or the mark of the witch, you see.
Right.
They wouldn't know what vernacular to use, so they tried to communicate it as this is an evil thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And did you know that in Irish mythology, maybe the person who sent that question might be interested to know also, but did you know in Irish mythology it was an absolute stipulation that if a king had a single blemish, he could not rule the Celts?
I didn't know that.
Oh, my gosh,
yeah.
I did not know that.
Right. Single rotten tooth or, you know, strange, any kind of a mole or blemish and what have you, and the king could not rule. This is, again, a throwback to the idea that if you had the fallout problem, you see, or maybe you were genetically hybridized, then they wouldn't have you because you were too much alien or whatever. So that in our traditions, we even have this.
Makes sense.
The witches. Yeah, the witch and the whole idea of the witch having that famous devil's mark that would then have all the village come out and drag her down and burn her at the stake or whatever. That is also a throwback to the idea that the wise one would bear a mark of hybridization, that the wise one was a creature who was half and half, half alien, you see, half humanoid. There's tremendous symbolism in our, even the little customs that our tribes and villages used to do, but we've forgotten what those actually mean.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know one of the books that I've read over the years that I found most fascinating, it's called The Origins of Man by Edgar Cayce. I don't know if you've ever read that. It's like a classic in my book, you know.
It's a classic.
I have several copies of it because, you know, it went out of print a long time ago. But it does talk about these beings that were, you know, kind of put together in... I think that was the first time they read it in detail, how he described how they were, you know, done that way. But certainly fascinating.
It is. Rudolf Steiner talks about it, and Madame Blavatsky talks about it. If people are interested in this, they should pick up my Atlantis book or the DVD I just did. We just released a DVD a month ago on this called Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. It's the companion to the book. It was people, you know, calling me from all around the world, said, you know, are you going to do this as a video or a DVD, and it was through suggestions that finally this year we worked on a whole project to actually, you know, do the book as a DVD. And also, since I wrote the book, there's been new discoveries. So all the stuff that I wanted to put in the book but couldn't is in the DVD, you know, so that's also been released within the last month. It's part of the Origins and Oracle series.
That sounds wonderful. Another question from the chat room. Somebody wants to know when the Taroscope book series will be available for sale.
They are pretty much ready. I just haven't released them yet. There's reasons for that. There's a lot. I'm a person who does things in very distinct, sections.
Mm-hmm.
And the DVD project I'm telling you about, the Origins and Oracles thing, has taken over 2 years to produce.
Oh my!
Not to mention the 25 years of research. You know, like I said, my studies. But in order to do the DVD series correctly, it's taken a great deal of time because I wanted to do it in the Joseph Campbell style, which Joseph Campbell was my model.
Oh yes.
For doing these DVDs, and it had a very specific energy to do these DVDs. Was this, mm-hmm. We talk about adversarial energy.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. You know, and just. And it's a monumental task. We've got 22 DVDs in all. There's 6 programs in the Origins and Oracle series.
Holy cow.
Right. So, and there's been a lot of work meticulously to go into doing it the right way, getting the right team, you know, all the rest of it. So that and also the Irish Origins book, you know, there's certain priorities that need to be done and got out of the way. And then we're going to release the Taroscope series, which is, you know, this is a fantastic 6 set also of books, and of course there'll be ebooks perhaps as well, dealing with my entire taroscopic system. So they're on their way. It's just that, you know, I am a person who believes that each project you do has to be given the full reverence, the beginning, middle, and the end, and you know, you close it reverently and you move on. So we've just now, within the last 30 days, finished the DVD project, you know, Origins and Oracles, and we have a website too, originsandoracles.com, if people want to go and look at the DVDs. And then now I've got to get the Irish Origins book finalized, and then after that we'll you know, 100% be able to focus then on the Taroscope series that the question was about.
Okay, Sandy passed me something saying that you're going to be on the, I guess, Sci-Fi Channel on July the 9th.
That's right. There's the Sci-Fi Channel are doing a 2-hour special on Atlantis, very similar to the one that they did on the Bermuda Triangle last year. And the producer of that, Tim Beecham, it was the most watched program in sci-fi history.
Oh, wow.
The Bermuda Triangle. And, of course, these are syndicated shows, and they had a tremendous response to that.
Hmm.
So what do? They looked for a bigger phenomena, and they're doing one now in Atlantis, which is a remarkable. And I'm glad to see it because this information needs to get out. Now, strangely, don't ask me why, but Tim Beecham had heard of my work. And do you remember when a couple of months ago New York was totally on a standstill because they had that power outage?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yes, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Well, he had read my book at that time and really studied it and wanted me to appear on that show. So they sent a film crew out to do a segment on my work, which is really remarkable because I didn't expect, you know, that to happen.
Wow.
And it was really wonderful. Yeah, they spent a lot of time. He did ask me about the Illuminati. They did ask about the secret societies, as well as the concepts of Atlantis. And I'm sitting there thinking, what on earth are you talking to me? I mean, you couldn't get more controversial than this guy. But, you know, remember Sandy was saying earlier about that there's a change, the end of the age of Pisces, that
right.
Even no matter how much resistance exists in the world, you know, you cannot keep a truth down. And it almost seems like this controversial stuff or the conspiracy movement is moving at full steam ahead now, and even Hollywood and even some of these groups are picking up on it. You know, where it's okay for some of them, it's just a new spin in town, it's just a new vogue thing, but for others there's a genuine interest. I felt that very much from this producer, that there was a genuine interest. He didn't want some bogus rubbish, you know, rehashing the same old rubbish on Atlantis. He had sought me out, you know, specifically. He was very adamant about that, said that they were going to give me, you know, time to really talk even on the more controversial issues. So, you know, let's see what they do with it. I mean, I really don't know, but it's going to be on July 9th, actually.
Hmm.
So if people want to make a little note on their on their inbox calendar or write it down on their calendar, July 9th, they'll be showing this 2-hour special. It's going to be one of the most watched shows in science fiction channel history. So it might be interesting to see how it comes out, you know.
Do you know what time it's supposed to be on?
I don't know. I think it's going to be between 7 and 9. Usually the prime time, you know, of the
channel. That makes sense.
Believe me, they're gonna advertise it massively in the next month or so. If people get onto sci-fi.com, then they'll be able to. And I'll be probably posting updates when I know them. You know, they get back to me to tell me. I just did an interview for their sci-fi magazine, so there's also going to be an article in their magazine, which people should check out as well. Mm. It's just great to see that, you know, that there's still an interest in this subject.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and what's the web address for your blog as well?
It's MSAR. Actually, you know what people need to do is just go to themichaeltesarian.com. Instead of writing down all these hard-to-spell websites, just go to my, because I've got so many of them, you know.
Yeah.
And people say, hey, we didn't get enough time to write that down. So just go to michaeltesarian.com, and you'll find links there to all my other websites, to Taroscopes, to Origins and Oracles, to the blog, to Timescopes, which is a numerology website that I have, which is getting a lot of attention right now. We made some major updates there. So if they just go to michaeltesarian.com, then they'll be able to navigate from there to all the other relevant sites.
Hmm. Well, this has been the most fascinating interview that we've had yet. And
Sandy was
so excited about this. So definitely going to have you come back in the future, and especially when some of these new updates come out. And maybe after the sci-fi special airs, and we'll have some more questions for you. But we're so happy that you were able to come on, and wish you luck with your Taroscope series and also with Origins. And thanks so much for coming on.
You're most welcome, Laura and Sandy. Thank you very much for giving me the time. I appreciate it.
Very, very well worth the time.
You have a great day. Okay, well,
let's move on. since we are, gosh, at the end of the show here already, it's hard to believe this went so fast and just kind of whipped right by, didn't it? 2 hours, just poof.
You know what? He's not a novel. He's like an encyclopedia. I mean, the whole set.
Yeah, he pretty much is. That just kind of blew me away for sure. But my goodness, he's somebody that you could probably sit down and listen to, and he could he could tell you so many stories, and you know, with your cup of tea and a scone or something, and you'd hear the whole mythology tale.
And the way he talks about Tarot, it makes me feel more confident, because I do have a lot of people that are scared of my cards and they think there's something wrong with me. And same thing with you, you know, but he makes it feel like it should. Like it's holy. And and they used to, he was saying something about, well, not on this interview, but in a different interview, that hollow earth meant holy, and go to the place of the hollow earth to pray and visit the oracles. But they changed the word from hollow to holy.
Huh.
And can you imagine nowadays, Stan, let's go and...
Yeah, All Hallows Eve.
Oh, that's right. Hello.
But can you
imagine calling up your relatives and saying, let's go visit the oracles. You know, I can't wait until we can
kind of
say
a
that.
Trek, yeah.
Yeah.
It used to be quite a trek.
Well, the oracles should be right there at the palm of your hand, see?
Just like the Palm Pilots, huh?
That's right.
You know, you have a bad psychic when they read your Palm Pilot instead of your palm. Well, next week we have Stanton Friedman coming on, and of course he is the reigning expert on the Roswell incident, Roswell, New Mexico. And he's got a book out, Top Secret Magic. Excellent book. I'm reading it right now. So you'll want to make sure you come on for that. And then Thursday on Full Moon Mayhem, we have Kevin Sercombe. He's going to talk to us about orbs, spirit orbs, and all kinds of different colors. He's written a book on it, actually. I think it's the only book I've ever seen written on spirit orbs. So you'll want to make sure that you tune in for that. And we got a scoop, because this is the end of it here. And it's been great, guys. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you on Thursday for Full Moon Mayhem. www.omnisoundradio1.net.
Thank you.